I'm Steve Potter, and welcome to Cityscape. Later in the program, graphic designer Bryony Gomez-Palacio, founder of one of the country's most influential design blogs. And Aaron Williams talks to Deborah Nelson Link of the Hands-On Black History Museum and to photojournalist Wiley Price about an exhibit that features rarely seen vintage photographs that piece together forgotten chapters in black history. But first...
It's raining.
This musical is full of dance floor favorites like that one. Priscilla, Queen of the Desert opened on Broadway just 2 years ago. Its St. Louis run was this week at the Fabulous Fox Theater. And joining us now, cast members Wade McCollum and Scott Willis. Welcome to you both.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, I was there. I saw the show Wednesday night, and it certainly is not only an earful, but an eyeful. Is it not?
Yes. Yeah, it's pretty spectacular. Yeah,
the show's won just about every costume award anywhere it's ever played, and I think there's like close to 500 costumes.
Yeah.
So it's a lot to see. Plus a bus.
Right. You know, and we'll talk about that later, but I kind of think the bus is its own character, don't you think?
Oh, exactly. Yeah, the eponymous character, as it were.
You know, I knew I was in for something when I walked in and all the ushers were wearing boas.
Yeah.
Sort of a hint of things to come.
Yeah, it's a good time show.
And it was an interesting crowd of people there, too, and I can't help but think that it was something new for a lot of people.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. It's, I think a lot of people know what they're getting in for because we can feel from the very beginning of the show there's an energy with this show that precedes us. As soon as those women start singing Raining Men, the audience is already with us and we haven't really done a whole lot yet.
Yeah. Priscilla, Queen of the Desert was a 1994 movie, which I don't know how many people have seen it. It's a cult favorite at least.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's about three friends, and it takes place in Australia, and it's about three friends who hop on an old, dilapidated bus and set off to find love, friendship, adventure. What would you say?
Yeah, I mean, the narrative thrust is Tick, who's a drag queen in Sydney, a gender illusionist. He's married and has a child. And
this is your character.
Yeah, yeah. He gets a phone call at the beginning of the play from his wife saying that the kid is asking about his dad and wants to meet him.
It's like 9 or 10 or something.
Yeah, 8, 9, 10,
somewhere around
there. Mm-hmm. And Tick is kind of the reluctant protagonist. I think in my mind he's sort of just a big kid who doesn't really want to grow up and is sort of facing his own insecurities of being rejected by his own child and facing all sorts of cognitive dissonance about his lifestyle. And the wife says, come on out. And so he enlists his two friends to come on this adventure with him, driving this bus across.
Okay, three people, as you say. The character you play is a drag queen. How'd you put it? Illusionist?
Well, Tick is a gender illusionist. He's kind of stands between the old guard drag and the new guard drag. The other two characters, Bernadette is very much of the 60s. She's gender illusion, lip sync only.
Scott.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And she's very much a traditionalist when it comes to gender illusion.
But am I wrong? I thought your character was a transsexual. Is that not right? Or?
Right.
Okay.
But also a performer.
Uh-huh.
So she's done drag performing, but she lives her life as a woman. She had surgery and reassignment and a big change in her life and has lived her life that way.
Right. And then the third character is sort of an up-and-comer drag performer, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she represents much more of the androgynous new guard, kind of more provocative, more overtly sexual. And she's crazy and a party kid. And so the three of us definitely represent all sorts of the, you know, kind of the diversity of drag in Australia in the 90s, at least.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, Australia. What do you know about the origins of the show? I mean, is it based on a true story?
That I don't know. The musical is was written and adapted by the same people that wrote the movie. So even though I think the tone of the musical is a much more optimistic, upbeat sort of story than the movie, it's very true to the movie. Same story. All the costumes, actually, it was designed by the same designers. Even though the costumes may show up in different places in the movie, they're still all on stage.
So in addition to you three who ride the bus, another important element of the show are the three what you call divas.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Who sort of, I don't know, sort of musically link things together.
Right.
Yeah, they're kind of like our angels of music.
Yeah.
And when you say angels, they literally come from the sky.
They fly a lot. They fly more in the tour version than on Broadway, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, they're actually suspended in the air.
Oh, yeah. They're taken up in the air moments before they sing so that they're not hanging out, you know, too much. But they go up on the, and actually Brian, too, Felicia, the guy that plays the younger drag queen, he flies. And they're taken up off stage and brought over up in the wings where the lights and the curtains and everything are, so and then brought down.
And I'll tell you, for people of a certain age, the music's really enjoyable, because I talked to several people in my age bracket. And if you were in your 20s when you first started going out, you know, in the evening, it's all the songs I remember from like the early 80s.
Totally, right? Totally. But I mean, the kids know these songs too, because yeah, the young people, I think, know all the songs, too, because, Madonna's still performing, and I think they're enjoyable for just about any age group.
We mentioned the costumes. I think that they won a lot of Tonys on Broadway, didn't they, mm-hmm. for the costumes? And as you said, there's something like 500 or more. Mm-hmm. That must be quite a feat backstage.
Well, I've done a lot of big musicals. I've done 42nd Street, which has more people in it, but I don't think it has more costumes. Our show travels with 9 semi-trucks, which is a large number of trucks for a national tour to transport. Of course, we have a bus. Our bus is the bus that was on Broadway, and it cost over $1 million. It does a lot of different special
What is that,
things.
LED lights or what?
I guess so.
Is that what you call
you
it?
Know?
Yeah,
that,
I think it's covered in some insane amount of LED lights.
Some amazing effects.
They can do, yeah, just about anything.
The one that really, they were all good, but the one that really got me was when you came out of the bus one, it was the morning and the sun rises.
Yeah.
That was breathtaking.
Yeah,
really.
It's great. You know, we paint the bus at one point, so they can do different patterns on the side of the bus,
amazing.
And it's very technical.
Wade, we meet you first, and your character is pretty complex because you evidently had some sort of relationship that ended up with a son, and then you went on. I guess you weren't involved in the son's upbringing. Is my impression right?
Not yet.
But you right.
Yeah.
And that's that's the motivation for this whole tour.
It is, yeah. It's time to grow up and become a father and face reality.
But you're kind of scared of that.
Absolutely. I think, you know, Tick is just a big kid in a lot of ways, and he is. He's resisting his own maturation process.
And not just that. Aren't you worried about being rejected?
I think that's the heart of it, and I feel like the fundamental messaging behind the entire play is a sense of not belonging. And these are very outrageous characters, people who have had to assert themselves in a way in society that is about creating their own sense of belonging. And I think throughout the play, they kind of create community wherever they go and end up creating a sense of belonging. And for Tick, my character specifically, yes, he's afraid of being rejected by his son. And when we come to the end of the play, there is a great sense of relief when he's accepted. And the son actually makes the most non-issue about his father out of all the characters in the play.
Right. Yeah, it's not really a big deal.
No, he models the most incredible point of view, I think, of anybody mm-hmm. in the play.
Well, what a journey on this bus, too, because you drive across the Australian outback, and I don't know what you would compare it here to the country. Maybe in the United States, flyover country. We're talking about conservative areas. In fact, you end up in what we might call a redneck town?
Very much so. A couple of them.
And it doesn't go so well. So another big thing there, there's a huge issue that's addressed, homophobia, really, in that bar scene.
Right, right.
Yeah, and the fear of gender illusion when, you know, it's a really hotbed issue. We go into a small town and Felicia, who is kind of the radical queen who's, you know, young and she does some drugs and she goes out and she wants to make trouble. She stirs up trouble for herself and she tricks a guy into thinking
kind of coming on to straight guys, right?
Yeah. And she really pushes it and it becomes this frightening, violent situation that we have to save her from. And, you know, yeah, it's the show is great that way because it is a party, but it also addresses some, you know, some deeper issues, which is great.
And Scott, your character, the performer who's also a transsexual, has an unexpected relationship in one of these small towns.
Yeah, well, the show starts out, fairly soon within the show, there's an amazing funeral scene. So she's lost not the love of her life, but certainly one of the loves of her life. And she's been retired for a while. She was a star. Back in the 60s, there was a wonderful... drag show is what you would call it, called Lay Girls, and it's referred to. So her character is actually based on a real person that did exist, a woman named Carlotta, and just loosely based on that person. But she probably has a very strong sense of herself because she made a place for herself and a good life. But she's lost love, and so her friend Tick asks her to come out of retirement and to do this show in the great outback at Ayers Rock, which is the largest monolith in the world. And so she decides the friendship is worth coming out of retirement briefly. And on the way, she meets a very nice man. And
who accepts her as a woman.
Yes, exactly.
Which is...
But he's a unique individual as well. I think he had a little bit of history. He knew what Lay Girls was when he was younger. He was there.
Right, yeah.
And so that is sort of the introduction into their friendship and how it all begins.
We're talking with actor Scott Willis and Wade McCollum, cast members from Priscilla Queen of the Desert, which is at the Fox, until February 10th. And you mentioned drag shows there for a second. I was talking to some people. It's interesting how more mainstream drag shows are becoming these days. I mean, there was a time, I guess, they were in, you know, you had to know where they were, I guess.
Yeah.
And now, down the street here, we have a restaurant that features drag, just blocks from here, drag queen, drag shows on weekends. Cool. And we were talking, I bet there are a lot of people in the audience at the Fox that this was sort of their first drag show.
Mm-hmm. Probably
Perhaps,
so.
Yeah.
Probably so. It's funny that it's... I think it's a very American thing for them to not be mainstream. I think in Australia, they've been around for a long time. In Germany, in many European countries, it's a very accepted form of entertainment. And the performers are very well respected, but there seems to be a bit of a phobia.
There's an amazing drag tradition in America. I mean, I feel like... I know. I grew up in a small town for a lot of my childhood, and I certainly there was a tradition there, and I think RuPaul has been, you know, kind of the progenitor of this incredible new wave of really incredible artistic queens that are creating incredible craftsmanship, and they're artisans of their world, and I feel like the drag has always been this incredible art form, but it's now gaining some of the respect that it's always deserved.
Mm-hmm. Wade, there are a couple of numbers that I'm just, tell me if I'm right. I think they meant a lot to you. Two things in particular. How about MacArthur's Park?
I love that number, yeah. To me, that's a kind of crack tick open in my character and see his soul, which is just this little boy dancing alone in his room and having a great time. And to me, that's, you know, he's in his pajamas in that scene. It's early morning. And that song is this crazy hallucinatory anthem of empowerment.
Right.
And so, yeah.
And another song you did that I thought was really touching was a duet. You'll have to tell me the name of the song. The duet you did with your son.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. What is that old Elvis song called?
Oh yeah, that one.
You know, to me that song is just dialogue. You know, it starts out, his son asks him to do an Elvis impersonation. It's the first song that comes to his mind, and then it becomes this kind of piece of dialogue you know, that he's always, it was always on my mind. That's what it's called. You were always on my mind. And, you know,
it's really endearing, though.
Oh, it's great. Beautiful. And it's such a great writing thing to be able to act with these kids. We have two kids who play Benji. And it's incredible. They're so innocent. They're so present. They're so good. Mm-hmm. And it's just incredible and such an honor to be on stage with everybody. But the kids are really awesome.
There's also kind of a interesting take on the whole lip syncing aspect of drag performing, right? Do you know what I'm talking about? Your character does lip syncing, Wade. Scott, yours really sings, I think.
Well,
I'm getting mixed up.
No, the conceit, I think, of the show, I read an article a couple years ago that the writers knew that, the producers knew that an audience would want to hear these hit disco songs sung the way they were originally sung. So whenever most of us sing, we may begin a song and it propels the plot forward, and then the divas sort of take over and you hear the songs the way you know, you're used to hearing them.
We're going
to
take a phone call here, but yeah, interesting what you just said about the disco songs. You change it up, though. They're not exactly like the originals, which I thought was good. And in fact, in some cases, you started out a disco song, singing it very slow, and it takes you a second, goes, oh, wait a minute, that's
a
disco song.
Yeah, you catch on, yeah.
So let's go to Webster Groves. Matt's on the line. Hi, Matt. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great.
Hey, this I saw the show Tuesday night, and it was fantastic. It was so fantastic, in fact, I came home and bought tickets for my 13- and 15-year-old daughters to go with their mother
last
night. That's
great. Cool. Thank you.
And they loved it.
Oh, cool.
Their favorite three scenes were the opening, the Serenity Men, and the Madonna Material Girl, which I loved, too. Uh-huh. My gosh, those dancers are gorgeous. And the final scene. But I wanted to give Tick a compliment, and I'm sorry I don't know your real name, but you on Tuesday night you had a sound issue,
yeah,
and you sang a cappella for about, I don't know, 8 to 10 bars, and the curtain came down, and you all fixed the sound, and you came out and winked at the audience, said act two, and you just did a fantastic job under difficult circumstances to bring the whole show. I think the whole audience forgot all about it.
Thank you. That was actually really fun. I love live theater for that reason, that we get to problem solve in the moment. And it was quite an honor to try to fill that huge, amazing, beautiful, gorgeous, sacred theater you guys have in St. Louis with just my voice with no amplification. I was like, okay, I'm going to give this a shot.
Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, the musical, runs through February 10th at the Fabulous Fox. If you'd like ticket information, it's MetroTix at 534-1111, or go to stlpublicradio.org to the Cityscape page. We'll have a link to all of that. Wade McCollum and Scott Willis have been our guests today. And one thing quick, Scott, before we go, I know that mm-hmm. you've toured with the Rockettes playing Santa Claus.
Right.
And at first I thought, oh, isn't that so different, playing Santa Claus and then a drag queen? And the more I thought about it.
No, it's a different kind of drag.
It's not that different.
No, because they both have the same kind of heart, a very generous, loving heart. And Santa actually has more hair and more padding than Bernadette does. So
that's Scott Willis. Wade McCollum, thank you so much for
thank
being
you.
Here. Have a great run and stay in St. Louis. Thanks.
Thanks
thank
a lot.
Thank you.
Coming up next on Cityscape, Forgotten Black History, and later, a graphic designer and blogger visits St. Louis to discuss her work. This is St. Louis Public Radio.